everyone. I love my new intro music. I'm Beanie Cone Bretos, and welcome, welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beanie Show. And for those of you who may be tuning in for the very first time, in fact, today happens to be the 350th Ask Beanie Show that I have done here on the Progressive Radio Network. And where has the time actually gone? Well, I am a psychotherapist, and I'm also a sex therapist and the author of For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. I am a columnist, a national speaker. I am an expert guest on national radio and television. And of course, I host this wonderful, terrific Ask Beanie Show here on the Progressive Radio Network every Monday afternoon live from 3 to 4 p.m. And I have a private practice in New York City and also in East Hampton. So people ask me all the time, so what is the Ask Beanie Show really all about? Well, in one word, it is really about empowerment, because the reality is that we all have issues and none of us can escape the ups and downs of life, whether or not you are Black or white or brown or Jewish or Christian or Muslim or gay or straight. The fact is that this is a complicated, complicated life for, you know, for all of us. And on this show, we talk about mental health issues and sexuality and relationships and about what we need to do. And of course, the key word is really do, not just lament and not just talk and not just hope and not just dream. But what is it that we actually have to do to maximize our physical and emotional well-being despite the stressors of our life? And my mantra, and I think I really learned this from my dad, who was my tennis coach, actually, who was my coach off and on the courts. And we always talked about the importance of there being a new day. And he used to tell me, he said, you know, if today didn't go so well, hopefully tomorrow is going to be better. And of course, we need to change our strategies in life if things that we are doing are not working out well. And this is where the, you know, the Alcoholics Anonymous, the mantra of, you know, really knowing the things that we are able to change and recognizing the things that we cannot. And of course, the importance of actually taking it in and really recognizing the difference of what we can control, of what we can't control, and making sure that we are clear. And of course, the things that we can control, we need to acknowledge and address, which has been my mantra for, I think, most of my life. Not always successfully, I might add, but to acknowledge, address, and take whatever steps that we need to take to resolve as best as we can the things that get in the way of our life and the things that get in the way of our relationships. And, you know, every week I say the same thing, and I really hope that I have convinced you over the years that we do not need to navigate this life journey on our own. And reaching out to family, if we are lucky enough to have terrific, wonderful family and friends, and if need be, to reach out to professionals, and it can make our life journey easier and much less isolated and alienated and lonely. So I hope that you all really do take that in. Because if we're looking at what is going on in the world of mental health in this country, the numbers are really pretty frightening. If we're looking at depression, 17 million adults in the United States are suffering from depression, which actually translates into 7.1% of all adults, females 8.7%. And females experience depression, or at least we express depression or feelings of depression, at roughly 2 times the rate of men. And half of all Americans these days are seeking help for depression. You know, I was looking at that statistic, and that statistic is actually, it's a very positive thing. If we're feeling depressed, if we're feeling anxious, and if we are wise enough to do what is in our best interest and reach out and ask for help, then that is all good. And if we're looking at anxiety disorders, statistics tell us that there are about 40 million Americans who are suffering from a variety of anxiety disorders, including panic attacks. And what about what is going on in the world of domestic violence and divorce and teenage dating abuse? You know, when I think about it, I grew up in Winnipeg, Canada. Yes, I am Canadian, and I think teenage dating abuse, it's like, what is that really all about? I think when I was a child and when I started to date, I mean, maybe the boy would take your hand and you didn't want him to take your hand, or you didn't want him to kiss you. But now we are in a very, very different era. For example, four women are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partner. And if we're looking at teenage dating violence, and I was just looking at some of the most recent statistics, nearly 1 in 11 females and approximately 1 in 14 male high school students report having experienced physical dating violence in the last year. And that happens to translate into about 1 in 8 females and 1 in 26 male high school students reported having experienced sexual dating violence in the last year. And what's really interesting is that despite these statistics, 81% of parents believe that teen dating violence is not an issue. And, you know, when you think about all the therapists and the coaches and the self-help books and the movies, what is really going on? Because we have a divorce rate of first marriages of 48%. 67% of second marriages also end in divorce, and 74% of third marriages end as well. In fact, next week, the subject is going to be gray divorce, because we are seeing greater numbers of couples who are divorcing after many, many, many years of marriage. And of course, in the headlines these days, you know, we're looking at Bill and Melinda Gates and what has happened to their marriage after 27 years. So this is a tough time. This is definitely a tough time, to be trying to navigate our lives. And yet, what are the options? And again, the very, very best things that we can do when we start to experience our life really, getting off track, is to definitely reach out and get some really good professional help. And of course, I don't know how many of you read Lori Gottlieb's book, Maybe You Should Talk to Someone. So hopefully, you know, with Lori Gottlieb and the Ask Beattie Show, that I have convinced many of you that we do not need to navigate life on our own. And just a couple of tips, of course, following Dr. Gary Null's advice every single day about the importance of plant-based diets and fruits and vegetables and grains, and to make sure that we are eating healthily and interacting with healthy people and having healthy relationships. And of course, getting enough sleep, 8 hours of sleep. And if you can manage a nap, that's a really good thing too. In fact, I got an email just before the show and somebody wanted to know whether I was ever nervous before I did my radio show or before I am on television. And I said, well, I said, yes. And what I do is that I lift weights and I get down on the rug and I do some leg exercises and I do some breathing. And it actually really, really helps to alleviate some of the anxiety, before doing a show. So I encourage you also to think very seriously, whether you have a show or whether you don't have a show, about the importance of exercise and weight training and yoga and meditation and just taking a bath, just taking a shower and a bath can make all the difference in the world. And of course, making sure that we all have supportive people in our life, and people who know me well and my patients know that I am a zero toxicity tolerance person, and that we need to make sure that we are eliminating all toxins. Of course, most people, when they talk about toxins, they talk about chemical toxins. And when I talk about toxins, yes, I do talk about chemical toxins, but I really mostly talk about toxic people. And we want to make sure that we eliminate toxic people from our life. In fact, I was talking to a patient of mine this morning, you know, and telling her that she is slowly starting to go down the tube because of her toxic relationship with her husband. And, you know, we can only do so much. And one of the things that we have to realize is that we cannot change anybody at all. The only person that we can change, of course, is ourselves. You know, other things to help make your days less stressful and more positive, positive visualization, dancing, listening to music, getting out into nature, getting a dog. I don't know what Jim and I would do without Cha-Cha. It's just such a great thing to have a dog where you always have unconditional love that's greeting you, you know, at the door. So again, we have to think about, and this is the assignment that I give every single one of my patients after every single session. It's the exact same homework, to make sure and to be mindful as we go through our days that we are doing things that are really in our best interest. And I think that mindfulness exercise happens to be very, very important for all of us, because it is easy to really get off track. Well, we are going to be moving into an entirely different subject right now, and that is the reality of getting old in America. And I was looking at these statistics and they were really pretty surprising to me. In less than two decades, the graying of America will be inescapable. Older adults are projected to outnumber children for the first time in history. And by 2060, nearly one in four Americans will be 65 years and older. That is amazing. And the number of 85 plus year old people will triple. And the country will add 500,000 centenarians. That's people who are living to 100 or over within this country. And the number of older adults, the country will see, of course, greater demands for health care, for in-home caregiving and assisted living facilities. Because we're living longer, and that's a good thing, thanks to medical breakthrough. But how can we make our golden years truly shine? Is there a way? And my guests are going to tell you that we can make our golden years truly shine. And is there a way to ensure that the final chapters of our lives are memorable and meaningful. How can we thrive and not merely survive? Because the majority of baby boomers yearn to embrace life. Yes, we do. Most seniors want to remain active, vibrant, and social while enjoying the comforts of their own home. Homes that they worked so, so hard to build and now want to experience. Well, enter therapy choice. And coupled with their in-home physical, occupational, and speech therapy, the company's home safety assessments, and we're going to be hearing a lot about that, offer viable solutions to the quality of life and the safety issues facing older adults. The company's goal is to allow seniors to remain safe, independent, and empowered in their own homes. And this is especially important now, given the impact that COVID has had on nursing homes. So today on my Ask Beattie show, I am so excited to have Therapy Choices owners and brothers, Mike and Ed Gasaski. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. And the executive director, Greg Donahue. And I understand that Therapy Choice recently, you celebrated your 20th anniversary. So congratulations and welcome, welcome again to the Ask Beattie show. I'm thrilled to have you and thrilled to have what I know is a really, really important conversation. So hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hello, Beattie.
Thank you for having us on.
Absolutely. Well, let's start right at the beginning, Mike and Ed, and tell me a little bit about how you both became involved with in-home therapy.
Previously, we were working in acute care hospitals or long-term care facilities and realized the number of people were being admitted to those facilities by having falls at home. So we said, well, let's try and get into the home and try and prevent some of these falls. So we directed our care. Both of us left those facilities and started working in the homes to prevent people from falling and ending up in hospital settings.
Mm-hmm. Because I know that there are so many things that can be done. I mean, I'm thinking about my own mom, my mother, of course, living in Canada with a very different healthcare system. She was able, with programs like yours, to remain in her apartment until she was 98. In the last 6 months, I unfortunately had to, you know, put her in a nursing home. But it was because of programs like yours that she was able to be surrounded by family and in her community and friends. So this is a really important thing that people really need to know about. And by the way, do people even know that they can get in-home therapy?
A lot of people may not. People are familiar, they can get it after being hospitalized, but not everyone's hospitalized, which is a good thing. But people do decline at home and probably are unaware that someone can come to their home if they were not hospitalized. So that's where we come in. We can bring the physical, occupational, speech therapy to their home, regardless of the fact if they were recently hospitalized.
So you're saying that even though people may not have been hospitalized, if they're starting to experiencing declining health, they would be able to then reach out to you? And would the services, including the assessment, would it be covered under Medicare or Medicaid?
Yes, services. It's Mike. I'm an OT, by the way. Ed's a PT. So, we cover, you know, both disciplines. So the idea of providing the in-home care under Medicare and Medicaid is definitely covered under Part B. And we just need a physician signature. A prescription. But, Ed, you can tell better for physical therapy. Is that still the case?
Yeah, for the most part, we're going to get a script for each patient from the doctor. And the first step is to, you know, the patient can call us and, you know, we'll call the doctor and see what the doctor thinks. And that more or less facilitates an initial assessment.
Now, are the doctors, are most doctors familiar with this type of in-home therapy?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Even though we've been doing this for 20 years, as you mentioned, and thank you for that, we're still fighting that battle. A lot of physicians feel or believe that the person has to leave their home to go to a local or a hospital-based physical therapy or occupational therapy center, but you're exactly correct that we are continuing to educate the physicians and primary care providers along with the patients themselves as to this service being available in the home.
Typically, so, for example, let's assume that somebody is needing physiotherapy. How does it actually work? So let's say that the doctor signs off and writes a prescription so that you're able to go in. So are we talking about once a week, every day? Because I know with my own mom, I mean, she required services, multiple services. In fact, up until almost the end, she had 24-hour care that was paid, thank goodness, by the Canadian healthcare system, which of course is very different than in America. But what happens if people are requiring more than once a week physiotherapy or occupational therapy? How does that work?
Yeah, the patients can get therapy more than once a week. On average, I would say it's approximately 2 to 3 times a week. And it certainly will depend on their diagnosis and the individual themselves and the prescription from the physician. But it's what is tolerated by the patient and what is most beneficial for them.
So if you go in and you discover that maybe twice a week or 3 times a week is not quite sufficient, then what happens at that point?
Yeah, at that point, we can certainly provide therapy even up to 4 or 5 times a week, but it's usually not common to receive outpatient physical therapy 5 times a week, week after week after week. It's okay if someone has a new hip fracture or an ankle fracture to receive it possibly 5 times a week the first week or two. And then what we're doing is training the caregivers, training the patient, the family members, how to begin doing their own exercise program, and then you go to 4 times a week and 3 times, you start weaning down, giving ownership to the patient and their caregivers to continue the program once the therapist is no longer coming.
Mm-hmm. Now, are most of the people who you work with, do they live on their own, or do they have partners or spouses or relatives or friends that could help oversee the kind of treatment that they are receiving from you?
I would say that a majority of them have spouses and certainly or have sons, daughters, grandsons or granddaughters, or partners living with them. Very rarely does someone live completely on their own. And if they do, they probably have what you refer to as the 24-hour care. So there is a caregiver there. Very few of the individuals we see are living alone, and maybe 4, 5, 6 hours a day they're alone. But for the most part, there's certainly support for them.
Uh-huh. And what have you both found are the benefits? I mean, I can think, of course, of the psychological and emotional and psychiatric benefits of people staying in their own surroundings. But what has your experience been in terms of benefits of actually working with people in their own environments?
Well, for me, from an OT perspective, which is the greatest thing in the world, is to work with someone in their own environment, because you can work with someone in a clinic and you can try to train them on strengthening and balance and everything, but you have no idea what their home environment is like and what barriers they have to overcome. So the most exciting part as an OT with working with someone in their home is to actually go in and help problem solve and see, you know, real time what's going on and what their challenges are, and to work with them to be as independent and as safe as possible.
Right. So you're working with the patient and also, this is just a question, with the physician. I mean, have you been able to really put together a team, you being the team leaders and then perhaps having the doctor and family members so that you're all quite coordinated and working toward the same end?
Absolutely. We provide weekly notes to the physicians. And we coordinate with the caregivers. And like my brother said, at the end of the treatment sessions, we always take the time to train the caregivers, those who are going to be with the patients and work with them after we leave to maintain the program that we developed.
So let me ask you this. So somebody has gotten a prescription from their physician to have you come in. What kind of home safety assessment do you do? What does it look like? Like, what can people who are listening to the show right now and they're thinking, I didn't know anything about this. I think that this is something that could really benefit me or a family member. What goes on when you first walk into a person's home and begin the home safety assessment process?
Well, if you don't mind, Ed, I'll speak for, I think, both disciplines. We basically look at the client from the minute they get out of their automobile or off public transportation and getting into their home. So it's egress. And then it's basically where they're living and what they're doing throughout the day in their home. You know, we go through each room, we find out what their daily activities are, and we assess from the minute they get up out of bed in the morning to, you know, all their activities, kitchen, bathroom, and as an OT, dressing, hygiene, toileting, you name it. It's everything that they have to do. We take a good look at that and do a proper evaluation and make the assessment based on their, you know, clinical diagnosis. And make the recommendations not only for, you know, strengthening and mobility and balance, you know, all kinds of different exercises that we do. It's also the recommendations for adaptive equipment and making sure that the adaptive equipment is the most proper equipment, because there are 10, 15 different kinds of bath chairs you can buy. But one person may look at it online and buy something that they think is appropriate. But quite frankly, I've been in homes where the bath seat that they chose, quite frankly, isn't safe, and they're at a higher risk of falling. So we get in there and we make an assessment and make and we're familiar with all of the DME equipment. So we make the most proper recommendation for their situation and train them on how to use it. We wait generally until they get the equipment. We make sure it's the most appropriate equipment, and we train them on how to use it.
I would think that they are so grateful to have you coming into their homes, and that, you know, the option of leaving their homes, even for a short period of time, is something that, because of what you're doing, may necessarily not have to happen at all. I mean, do you find that most of the people that you work with are actually able to just utilize the resources that you provide, and that they don't have to, at least initially, you know, you go into an assisted living facility or a nursing home?
Absolutely. And that's the whole idea, is eliminating any barriers that they do have. First of all, like Mike said, finding a way out. It may be as simple as a railing, it may be a stair glide, or an actual vertical lift where they can go out in their wheelchair. Same thing inside, railings, modifying their flooring, some grab bars to get in and out of the bathtub, modifying their toilet. And at that point, they've become much more independent in their own home. And ideally, it prolongs their longevity in their home for many years to come.
And it improves the quality of their life.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it improves the quality of their lives.
No, for sure. And I'm sure that people who are listening to our conversation right now are wondering, so, okay, this sounds great, But what about the costs? What about the costs for equipment? Are these costs also covered by Medicare and Medicaid?
Most equipment, what we call from a physical therapy standpoint, ambulatory equipment, canes, walkers, wheelchairs, those devices are covered by most insurances. Once you get into the bathroom, it gets a little dicier. Medicare does not cover items in the bathroom, unfortunately. I know our professional organizations have been trying to fight that for years. And the same thing with stair lifts and vertical platform lifts. There are different programs out there that will reimburse for it. Sometimes the ALS Society or MS Society. With the veterans program, we also do home assessments for the veterans, and different what are called managed care organizations will also pay for those modifications.
Uh-huh. And I think a lot of people probably wonder and may not know, what are some of the greatest dangers inside the home regarding falls?
Most are in the bathroom. And I just read a statistic that 36 million older adults will fall each year in the United States. And of the 36 million, 32,000 will die from a result of the fall. And so most falls occur in a bathroom, generally transferring in and out of the shower.
Uh-huh. Now, I remember my mom's bathroom, it was retrofitted with so many different things so that she would be able to safely get in and out of the bathtub. So given COVID, and, you know, hopefully we're going to all be able to move on in a post-COVID world, do you feel that seniors are more reluctant than ever to go into assisted living facilities or nursing homes?
Yeah, we definitely see a change. You know, nursing homes have gotten a pretty bad reputation due to what's happened here. Right. So people naturally have that fear. So, yeah, it's there.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that this is going to become a permanent shift where people are going to not only want to remain in their own homes for as long as possible, but will actually be able, with resources like yours, to remain in their homes?
Oh, absolutely. I think, at least I can speak for Pennsylvania, they're making a concerted effort to have more and more people remain at home and not going to nursing homes. Matter of fact, the one program that we work with, a community health choice program in Pennsylvania, they actually go into nursing homes and try to discover who really doesn't need to be in the nursing home. And then they ask, you know, if they have a resource to leave and have a home to go to or live with a family member. And that's one of the assessments that we do. We'll go out before someone's discharged from a nursing home back into the community, back into their home. So it's happening. And yeah, I think they're trying to put more dollars towards having people live at home because it is very expensive to live in a nursing home.
And, you know, I'm just wondering, as you were, you know, talking about people in nursing homes who may, with your kind of support, be able to stay at home. Do you think those statistics are pretty high? People who are in nursing homes, but with therapy choice resources would in fact be able, maybe with an aid here and there, would be able to stay home.
Ed, you want to take that one?
Sure. No, I believe it's certainly a percentage of individuals who would be able to go home with modifications to their home. The number one area that we notice is what's called egress. If someone had a pretty significant stroke and getting in and out of their home, if they have several steps, unfortunately, a number of people we see are being carried in and out of their home by family members in wheelchairs, and the families just can't do it any longer. Maybe the spouses. And so, for something as simple as that, someone may end up in a long-term care facility, whereas a ramp or some modification, we can overcome that barrier and the person can come home.
What about the work that you probably do with people who have dementia or Alzheimer's? Are you able with family support to also help them remain in their homes for as long as possible?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. There, that starts to touch on what's called assistive technology. So there's different bits of technology that you can recommend within their home to try and make it as safe as possible. It's certainly, you are touching on a challenging population, but and that's all of what we do involves caregiver, whoever the support person is, but certainly with that population, there's a tremendous amount of support and caregiver instruction, and that certainly will need to go on for years. But the home modifications you make, we try and make them the suggestions that will serve the person well into the future and their support staff.
You know, when I was citing the statistics, and I'm sure that, you know, all of you are so aware of these statistics. I mean, it's kind of amazing, isn't it, to think that older adults are projected to outnumber children for the first time in history. So we are becoming an older and grayer society with great, great needs more and more for resources that are going to be able to help us remain in our homes for as long as we possibly can. It's, I don't know, it's hard to kind of wrap, you know, your arms around this statistic, or at least it's hard for me to wrap my arms around this statistic, that this is becoming an older and older and older country.
And that touches on the housing fact is there are only so many long-term care and assisted living beds. And as the numbers you stated, there are more seniors than beds available. So now we have to look at the housing stock we have available in the United States.
Right.
And the housing is older in most areas and not built to accommodate someone who may have some disabilities, physical disabilities. And those are the challenges we're trying to overcome simply based on the numbers that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Does Washington care about any of this or not?
It's not that I don't think that they don't care. It falls more on a state level, state by state. Certainly Washington from the veteran standpoint, because the veterans, we do the home assessments for the veterans in our area also, and they certainly care. But most of the programs are run state by state. And then certainly private pay for the individuals who can afford that. But from a Medicaid standpoint, anyone on Medicaid within their state, all 50 states do have a program under what are called managed care organizations for home modifications.
And caregiver support.
Well, I'd really like to hear about some of the work that you're doing with the VA. And have you been with the VA for a number of years as well?
Yes, we've been working with the veterans in the Philadelphia region for about 15 years now, over 15 years now. And we do a combination. We, of course, provide physical, occupational, and speech therapy to the veterans in their homes. We also do the home assessments for the veterans. Either someone may be recently paralyzed and they're coming from the hospital, and we'll make home recommendations prior to the individual coming home, or someone who unfortunately has had traumatic brain injury, and we'll make those recommendations before the person comes home, or a veteran who is home already and may have been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis or Lou Gehrig's disease, or just simply declining because of aging, very similar to the non-VA individuals that we see, non-veterans that we see, trying to make recommendations for their home to optimize safety.
Do you have to be a certain age? I mean, I can think of a couple of patients that I treated in Sarasota, women who were in their 40s. Something happened. One had a stroke. The other had a very, very bad fall. And it was a question of like, oh, my God, what's going to happen? Are they going to be able to remain in their home? Are they going to have to move into an assisted living facility? So is there an age criteria in order to use Therapy Choices resources?
Not really. I mean, if it just depends on the insurance and the coverage for, you know, for the individual. You know, all insurers pretty much have an in-home benefit. So mm-hmm. if we're on par with the insurance company, certainly we could set services up.
And certainly for individuals who are on Medicaid, we see people that are 20, 25 years old who've had traumatic injuries, spinal cord injuries,
right.
or people in their 40s with multiple sclerosis. I would say the majority of our population are people 65 and older, but certainly through Medicaid and the managed care programs, we can see people at any, well, 18, above 18, above 21 years old.
Mm-hmm. Well, Greg Donahue, who is the executive director, now I have some questions for you. Welcome, welcome, Greg. As far as the staffing, I mean, is it difficult to find therapists who are willing to travel to people's homes for in-home therapy? And, you know, I'm curious about the assessment process that you use to find really good, qualified therapists who are going to be coming into people's private domain.
Well, we're not having a lot of trouble finding therapists right now.
You're
not. I can tell you that.
You're
not. No. Mm-hmm. No, we're not. You know, the home health agencies right now are losing a lot of therapists, because they have a different focus on therapy now. So they're really limiting the number of services that they're providing. So therapists are looking to transition into outpatient. And we're a little different in that, you know, while we're basically an outpatient practice, we're providing that service in the patient's home. So, you know, it's a little bit different, and the home health therapists really love it. There was two parts to that question. What was the other part?
Whether it was difficult to find therapists, you know, who were willing to travel, and also your assessment process for evaluating whether the therapist mentally, emotionally, psychologically, whether or not, I mean, you do background checks on people who are actually, you know, coming into our private environments and our private domains.
Sure. Yeah, we do a criminal check on every therapist that we hire. We do reference checking. Obviously, we're checking their licensure, make sure there's no complaints against their licensure. But, you know, most of the folks that we're hiring, they're either coming from a home health setting and they're used to working in the home with patients, so they understand that world, or they're coming from an outpatient setting. And there's a little bit of a transition if you're coming from outpatient, because there you're in a facility and you're working with three or four patients at the same time. So, you know, the therapists that we've hired coming from the outpatient world, they love it too, because, you know, they get to do one-on-one service and provide one-on-one focus with patients. So it's a little bit different. Obviously, going into someone's home is, you know, it's different. You have to respect their wishes and understand that, you know, it is their home. But, for the most part, you know, the folks that we've hired, the transitions have gone really smooth, and they've loved the change.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that the patients really appreciate the one-on-one attention. I mean, they're it. That's the focus of the therapist, just to make sure that this one patient is going to be able to move from A to B to C to D, and, you know, move forward in their, you know, in their rehabilitation. Another thing I was wondering, Greg, is, do you match the patients with a given therapist, or might patients get a different therapist for each appointment? And does it matter?
It does matter. And our therapists are case managing that case.
Uh-huh.
Meaning that they are doing their assessment, they're establishing the plan of care with the doctor, and then they're following that patient for 60 days, 90 days, sometimes up to 6 months, depending on what the patient needs. So it's usually just one therapist. Obviously, if a therapist goes on vacation or whatever, we check to see if the patient wants another therapist to fill in. It's always the patient's choice on that. But for the most part, the patient really gets to know the therapist, and you know, that's what makes it work.
Absolutely. That one-on-one intimate relationship, that's for sure. So what do you foresee in the future? Because you are in New Jersey, is that correct?
New Jersey and Pennsylvania.
And Pennsylvania, okay. So what do you actually foresee in the future for therapy choice? Are you planning to move into New York?
Well, our first area of expansion is going to be central New Jersey. Right now, we're basically in South Jersey. And we'll see where it goes from there. Obviously, it's, we're an outpatient practice, but we don't have an office where, you know, therapists are coming to work and patients are coming to be seen. So, you know, we can really spread out without expanding into real estate, so to speak. A lot can be done from our administrative headquarters. So,
that's certainly an advantage. As you say, you don't need real estate. You don't really need an office, do you? An office is such.
Not really. We just basically need a recruiting presence in an area, and from there you can go move on. I'll just point out one unique thing about what we do is, even though we're an outpatient service providing in-home services, our patients do not have to be homebound. And, you know, this service is normally provided through a home health agency, and under those payment parameters, you have to be homebound. So, you know, it kind of opens things up quite a bit, especially if the doctor is trying to figure out what to do with the patient who needs the service, but they're not quite homebound yet.
Mm-hmm. So in your area, I'm just, you know, curious about this. Have you received a lot of attention from the media, on the health segments, on different television shows? Although these days, fewer and fewer people watching television, because I think it's just so important that, the word gets out about what seems to be a very unique and important resource and service.
Well, that's why we're talking to you.
Yes, you are, and I promise you, I'm going to send you the link. What a great response! I'm going to send you the link of the show tomorrow, and I really encourage you to put it out there, you know, in social media, because people really, really do need to, you know, to hear about the amazing work that you're doing. So the industry. Your industry is really changing. Is that right? We're moving in a new direction.
Yes.
Which is all good. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you that, you know, with just a few minutes left, are there any other things that you would like my audience today to know about you, about the services, about the benefits? Is there anything that we need to add to this conversation?
Well, I know Ed wants to add something, but I would just like to add that, you know, part of our mission is to provide services to patients like we would want our own parents or family members to receive. That's kind of an underlying principle. So, you know, if everyone is on board with that concept, then a lot of things fall into place and you just don't have as many problems. So,
right.
You know,
right.
Our underlying goal, and I know Ed wanted to add something.
Okay, Ed.
I just wanted to circle back to something you touched on earlier, and it is, we've been doing this I've been a therapist for 26 years, going into the home, and probably one of the most important things we hear over and over again is how good the person feels mentally, not only physically, is the empowerment they have. They feel much more independent. They feel they can do much more. Something maybe as simple as getting on and off the toilet themselves or in and out of the shower themselves, but they just feel better about themselves. They feel more energetic, and their family members always report that also to us, their caregivers, saying, wow, can't believe mom or dad are doing this. And that's a huge component to it, too, by having someone come one-on-one into their home, is really eliminating the barriers that they have right there and giving them a program that they can do within their home. It doesn't have a fancy machine that you might see in a facility because you can't bring that machine home.
Right.
We program there, and just the, I'm not a psychologist, but we always hear about that psychological component of how good the person feels after completing a bout of physical or occupational therapy.
Oh, I mean, it's so important. I mean, we know that the mind, body, emotions, I mean, everything works together, and to have that sense of independence makes all the difference in the world. Now, if people, this is sort of my last question, if people are needing the resources that you provide for extended periods of time, I mean, it may be 6 months, it may be a year, are those services and resources going to be covered? Because money is an issue for, you know, for most people.
It depends on the program. It depends on the insurance. There are some insurers right now that basically you don't even have to go through an authorization process with, or the authorization process is every 6 months. So as long as the patient needs the service and you can document that there's a real need there, then you can provide the service. And it's, you know, there are times we go to bat for patients when we think, you know, they need the service, and the insurance company starts to, you know, try to get us to scale back. But, you know, it just, the trick is, what is the real need and how well do you document it?
Mm-hmm. Well, you're certainly providing an important and necessary service for, you know, for people. And I just want to give out your website, which is www.therapychoice.net. That's Therapy Choice. And I want to thank the three of you so much, you know, for coming on the show. And as I say, I'm going to send you the link, and feel free to do whatever it is you want to do with this link to get this information out to, you know, hopefully thousands and thousands of more people. So it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure talking with you. And it really brought back a lot of memories of the resources and services that my mom in Canada was fortunate enough to be able to have, which definitely extended her life for many, many years. So again, thank you so much. Let's be in touch, and we'll move forward with Therapy Choice. And again, thank you again. Take
All
care.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye. Very, very interesting to know that we actually have some options. I think that the last thing that people want to do and really fear is having to leave their homes and leaving their communities and friends and their surroundings. And I think it's you know, it's a terrific thing that you have you know, people like Mike and Ed Gasiowski, occupational therapist and physical therapist, who will be able to actually, you know, come to your home and to be able to accommodate. And these statistics, they actually really they surprised me a lot to see that by 2060, that nearly one in four Americans will be 65 years and older, and we are going to need certainly a lot of resources. Well, there was some really good news that I wanted to share with you about the future of therapy. And I started to address this last week, but in the New York Times, the headline is, "Will the future of therapy be at the drugstore? Who could have imagined?" But finding a therapist, as we all know, it can be a tough and time-consuming process involving multiple phone calls and waiting lists and insurance hurdles. And of course, these days, people are looking at reviews and likes, and that is not the way, that is not the way that I would recommend finding a therapist. You certainly want to get a referral from somebody that you trust, because all therapists are definitely not the same. But what if you were able to walk into your corner drugstore for a bottle of shampoo and also had the option of scheduling a walk-in session for mental health treatment? I mean, who would have thought? But that's the future that CVS, which is the largest retail pharmacy in the United States, is envisioning. So the article goes on to say that since January, the company has added licensed clinical social workers, it's amazing, trained in cognitive behavioral therapy to 13 locations in the Houston, Philadelphia, and Tampa metro areas. And the providers will offer mental health assessments, referrals, and counseling either in person or via telehealth, the CV spokesman said. And this spring, the company plans to expand to 34 locations in those same regions. I mean, just imagine you're having a bad day and you go into CVS and apparently Walmart, they are also, actually Walgreens, they are going to be facilitating therapy appointments as well. So you're having a bad day and maybe you're going to buy some lipstick or shampoo and just think about, if I only had somebody to talk to about my boyfriend, about my parent, about a job loss. And you're then able to just go up to the counter. And I suspect that this service is going to become busy. So I would imagine that appointments are probably going to be necessary. But just think, you're going to be able to go into a drugstore and have a therapy session. And again, I really want to emphasize the fact that, you know, all therapists are not the same despite credentials, so that you're going to have to be, you know, pretty careful about assessing. Yes, you're going to have to assess as well whether or not the therapist is someone who you believe and you trust, who will actually be able to help you. Well, I can't believe it is 3:57 Eastern Standard Time here in New York City, and an hour has actually gone very, very quickly here on the Ask BD show. And I want to thank you as always for listening and tuning in and emailing and texting. And every single week, I do hope that there's some little thing that I have said or my guests have said that will help to improve the quality of your life and your relationships. And I leave the show every week with two important messages. And the first one, of course, is to make sure that you do whatever it is that you can possibly do to be mindful of living your life in ways that are actually in your best interest. And of course, the second thing is that we all need to do a much, 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 much better job in learning to love each other. So goodbye, everybody. Have a good rest of the day. And of course, what the world needs now is love, sweet love. So I'll talk with you next week. Take good care. Bye-bye.